Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Wednesday, October 17th, 2012. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. Authorities shot and killed a brown bear cub Monday on Chichikov Island. It's believed to be one of three responsible for the fatal mauling of a Sitka man over the weekend. Sitka Police Lieutenant Barry Allen says a team performed a necropsy on the cub, but that results are pending. A Sitka detective and two Alaska wildlife troopers spent Monday and Tuesday on Chichikov looking for the sow and two cubs spotted in Poison Cove. That's about 30 miles north of Sitka. The bears behaved aggressively on Sunday towards some boaters who came ashore to investigate the abandoned skiff on the beach. The partially consumed remains of 54-year-old Tomas Puerta were found nearby. Allen says once a bear kills and consumes a human, it could become habituated by the behavior. Republican Senator Bert Stedman was in Haines over the weekend, and for the first time he publicly spoke there since the Upper Lynn Canal joined his newly redrawn district. Stedman was invited as a keynote speaker for the Chamber of Commerce's annual banquet. Stedman is running for re-election against Democrat Albert Kukesh, who previously represented the Haines area. Because of redistricting, Stedman and Kukesh are pitted against each other in the new Senate District Q. Stedman of Sitka is used to representing southern southeast communities, including Petersburg, Ketchikan, and some areas of Prince of Wales. The new district now includes Haines, Klukwan, Angoon, Hoona, Cake, Metlakatla, and all of Prince of Wales. Stedman himself admitted to the chamber members, "It's hard to think of the district as more than just island communities now." He also said he is still learning about issues important to Haines and the Upper Lynn Canal.
I'm not going to really talk much about Haines because, quite frankly, you need to know the community a lot better before you start engaging in policy issues. And hopefully I'm going to be able to have the opportunity to do that over the next couple of years.
Stedman was invited to join in a forum with his challenger, Kukesh, 2 weeks ago in Haines, but he declined. He also did not make a forum last Wednesday with Kukesh in Sitka, saying he preferred to campaign in Ketchikan. He did join Kukesh in a forum last Tuesday from Ketchikan. On Saturday, the co-chair of the Senate Finance Committee spoke to Haines chamber members about his priorities in the Senate, which include a push to increase infrastructure and transportation for Southeast.
One of the concerns we have in Southeast, there hasn't been a whole lot of forward movement in a couple of decades. There hasn't been a major road built in 30 years. There hasn't been bridges built, a lot of access issues. In fact, we haven't moved forward aggressively enough.
Stedman also said hydro generation in Southeast is important. He pointed to two hydro projects in Cake and Prince of Wales that could make communities more sustainable and self-reliant.
Particularly from central to southern, we're looking at increasing our hydro generation. We've got two mill potentials, each needing about 10 megawatts of power. So we need about 20 to 30 megawatt increase in our hydro plant. We're looking at trying to come up with some way of separating out some of the utility relationships. So Cake will be standalone, along with some Prince of Wales will be standing alone. So when we energize Cake, for instance, with hydroelectric, they're not going to be impacted with something that goes on in the Chilkat Valley or something that goes on in the Ketchikan or over in Sitka.
Stedman also put in a plug for Republican Representative Bill Thomas, who is facing a challenge this election from Sitka Democrat Jonathan Christ Tompkins. Stedman pointed to the many projects Thomas, as co-chair of House Finance, has pushed for funding in Upper Lynn Canal. While not mentioning Kukesh by name, Stedman claimed the current senator for the area did not help bring any project funding to Haines in recent years. Sitka's Historical Society Museum has opened a new exhibit. It's not your typical show. It reflects a change in direction that some museums are taking, and Sitka's curator is leading the way. KCAW's Anne Bryce reports.
When you think of a museum, you might picture famous paintings lining the walls or ancient artifacts housed behind glass, but you probably don't think salsa dancing. Well, when you're Jackie Fernandez, you do. She's Sitka's museum curator, and she's challenging the way people think about history and art.
There are just so many ways to interpret history and to tell the stories that I think it's important to tap into all of them.
She moved here from Boston 2 years ago and brought with her the idea of community curating. It's a way of both honoring the past and celebrating the present by inviting residents to submit their own pieces to an exhibit. It can be anything, from an old photo to an original song, and Fernandez says it's a great way to engage the community.
It keeps the space relevant and vibrant, and it ends up allowing you to tap into all of this wonderful creative energy and all of this talent that's all around you.
This is Sitka's fourth community curating exhibit. It looks at the city during Russian occupation in the 19th century, when it was the leading economic center on the Pacific Rim. It was this period of production and opulence that led Sitka to be known as Paris of the Pacific.
It was so fascinating to look at Sitka as a Paris of the Pacific in the 19th century, but I couldn't help but think about how today, in its own right, it's lived up to the title because this is such an amazing, dynamic community.
Sitkin submitted a variety of things, from a newspaper clipping about an artist who carved a totem pole for survivors of domestic violence, to a poster for the annual wearable art show. At the opening reception, a group performed a salsa dance dedicated to accordion player and longtime Sitkin, Alice McChesney, who died in 2009. Fernandez says it is a lot of work, but it's work that's well worth it.
It'd be much easier if I just got to sit behind my desk, put it all together, and do it by myself. That would be quick and fast and simple, but I don't like to do anything quick and fast and simple, and I think that Sitkins deserve better than that.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ann Bryce.
Representatives from the Southeast Charter and Commercial Fishing Industries are disappointed with catch-sharing plan for halibut recommended by the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council earlier this month. The rules could bring changes to the size and number of flatfish charter boat clients are allowed to keep in future years. Joe Vicknicki reports.
The Southeast Charter fleet has been operating under a guideline harvest level, which is a desired target of halibut caught each year. For many years, charter boats have exceeded that GHL. It's a very different system from the hard catch limits set each year for the commercial fleet. That would change under the catch share plan, which sets a combined commercial and charter catch limit. The recommendation was one of several alternatives considered by the North Pacific Council this month. Heath Hilliard is executive director of Southeast Alaska Guides Organization. He says he's disappointed with the allocation set for the charter fleet in Southeast, also known as Area 2C.
When you look at where we were actually under the GHL for 2012 and where we would have been had we been fishing under the CSP under the Alternative 3 that we got, I mean, it was a very sizable loss of allocation, somewhere in the neighborhood of 310,000 pounds.
The catch share plan has a sliding scale to allocate halibut between the commercial and charter industries depending on the combined catch limit. Anywhere up to 5 million pounds, the charter fleet would get 18.3%. With a catch limit between 5 million and 5.755 million pounds, the charter fleet gets a set allocation of 915,000 pounds. And anything over that amount, and the charter fleet gets just under 16% of the Southeast catch. There's a different sliding scale for Area 3A in the Central Gulf. Southeast Charter Fleet has seen restrictions on size limits of fish that clients can keep over the past 2 years as federal fishery managers tried to keep the overall catch within the guideline harvest level. Clients have also been limited to one fish a day. Those kind of management measures could continue under the catch share plan as fishery managers try to keep the charter catch at or below the allocation. In recommending the plan, the council expressed the intention to include public input and allow flexibility for management measures. Hilliard says that flexibility does not help at lower allocations.
We are pleased that that 2012 approach, that management flexibility component, remained in there. That was something we did ask for. What happens is when you get down to a certain level of allocation, flexible or no, it just becomes very, very difficult to find an appropriate management measure that will keep us under that allocation.
There's also a measure that would allow charter captains to lease quota share from the commercial fleet to provide more fishing opportunity for clients. The region's commercial fleet saw its first small increase in catch limits this year after years of decline and a decrease of 80% from peak catches less than a decade ago. Commercial interests have been pushing the council to adopt more controls over the charter fleet's catch. and the council selected a preferred alternative for a catch share plan back in 2008 and has been analyzing that decision and taking input before this year's recommendation. Linda Benkin is director of the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association and president of the Halibut Coalition. Both are commercial industry groups.
Well, we were disappointed that the council chose to reallocate more quota from the commercial to the charter sector relative to the action that the council had taken in 2008 or relative to where allocations were set when the GHL was initially set. But that said, there's some important components of the catcher plan that we are eager to see move ahead. We're very eager to see this issue resolved and some stability provided to all sectors of the halibut industry.
Bacon says it's important that the charter catch goes up and down along with halibut abundance.
The catcher plan ties both sectors to the same index of abundance. So from here on out, as halibut stocks fluctuate, the commercial and charter allocations would fluctuate proportional to abundance, which has not been the case in the past. The commercial fleet has taken a much bigger cut as abundance dropped than the charter fleet.
Benkin likes the catch share plan's separate accountability for waste that can occur in the two fisheries. Benkin thinks there's interest among the commercial fleet in leasing quota share to the charter boats. However, Hilliard with the Southeast Alaska Guides thinks many charter captains are not interested in that option. The catch share plan won't go into effect until 2014 at the earliest. That will leave at least one more year with a Southeast charter fleet operating under the guideline harvest level and restrictions similar to those in place this past year. The council action is a recommendation that goes to the Secretary of Commerce. Based on that decision, the National Marine Fisheries Service will develop a proposed rule and allow for public comment on that rule before implementing any changes. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. KCAW Sitka.